7 PM.
Mr. Priester, coming? He was back there and then we lost him.
Yep.
There he is. Today is a city council work session, Tuesday, October the 11th. Present is Councilwoman Mary Sue Rich, Councilman John Priester, Mayor Randy Ewers, Councilman Kent Gwynn, and myself, and City Manager Matt Brower. We're going to start today, and just Matt's going to give us an update on the storm and where we are presently.
Thank you, President Pro Tem. My staff's going to give a very brief update on where we're at with handling and mitigating the storm flooding. Just so that you know, from about Sunday midnight to Monday morning at about 6 o'clock, we received about 8.15 inches of rain, and that was measured at the City of Ocala Water Treatment Plant, which is located on the city's complex. That preceded approximately 2.5-3 inches of rain that were received from approximately Friday afternoon through Sunday evening, and so it was a tremendous rain event over about a four-day period. And by the time we received the heavy rains early Monday, of course, the ground was already saturated and the retention ponds full with the rain that had accumulated the previous 3 days. I'm going to invite Catherine Cameron to come up and give you a brief overview of where we stand right now.
Good morning. Catherine Cameron, Assistant City Manager, Public Services. As Matt said, we did receive a tremendous amount of rain. On the 10th, predominantly, we got 8.15 inches just on that day. There are several locations throughout the city that did have some flooding issues. We've placed 10 pumps around the city. I'm happy to report overnight, most of those areas, the water has receded to acceptable levels. We still have probably 3 or 4 areas that are still of concern, and we are working on those. Staff did work overnight monitoring all of the pumps. We had 42 road closures yesterday, and as of this morning, 23 of those have been reopened, and we expect several more to be opened before the end of the day. All traffic signals are currently working. I would like to report that the American Red Cross was called in yesterday. They sent some of their teams out to the different locations. They did provide assistance to families as far as providing lodging, food, cleaning kits. Brothers Keeper also provided furniture. Risk management went around, as well as Public Works, to all of the locations, visited the owners of the property, anybody that needed assistance. We also have sandbags at 8th and 14th for anybody that needs them. Public Works is also delivering sandbags to anybody that would like them. But I am happy to report that we have made great progress overnight. And by the end of the day, pending we don't get any rain, everything's looking pretty good. So do you have any questions at this time?
Any sinkholes?
We do. We have several sinkholes throughout the city. And we are currently working to repair or cordon them off.
Okay, just there's a couple of retention ponds by my office that always get them, and they got them again. So Northwest 7th Street, 2500 block.
Yes, we are aware of that one.
It was pretty interesting watching the water flow into that thing, just go down. It wasn't filling up, it just kept going.
The good thing is it receded. Yeah. Good thing is that one didn't overflow, but yes, we are aware of it and we are addressing that.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. I'll show you where.
Okay. Thank you.
Staff will have more thank information you at next Tuesday's regular council meeting to keep you appraised of the situation.
Okay. All right. And now we'll go to the topic of the workshop, which is the fiber network. And I believe we last met in March of this year. On this subject, and so we will be updated from that, and I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Brower.
Thank you again. Yeah, today is a presentation on a study that was commenced approximately 9 months ago. And so we're excited to have the findings and the results for you this afternoon. The intention of today is simply to continue the conversation, to present to you the results from the study, and of course to provide a forum for you to ask questions and inquiries. So at this time, I'm going to invite Alan Phelps, the Director of Telecommunication, to come up and introduce our guest.
Good morning. I'm Alan Phelps, Telecommunications Manager for OUS Telecommunications. I want to thank each of you for being here today. I really feel like it's important for us to continue to discuss telecommunications, the enterprise, the industry itself, not only where it's heading, where it's going in the future, but where it's come from, where it started, and where we are today, because looking at what happened from the beginning to where we are now really gives us a better idea as to what to expect in the future. If you look at the growth of it, it really gives us the ability to do that. And that's really what started all this and why we're here today. If you remember the last workshop that we had, we discussed something called open architecture. You may recall that we were looking at ways that we may be able to leverage our fiber system and be able to use that to partner with outside companies and be able to do something along those lines. Because of that conversation that we had, we actually went out and got a consultant, and we've been doing all kinds of data. We've been looking at the structure of our system the way that it is now. They did a survey out in the community, both residential and commercial communities, and just to kind of see what our demographic was, see what the attitude of the customers that we have out there today, what do they want to see. So they've done a lot of extensive work that I think is going to be very beneficial today. I think you're going to really enjoy hearing what's being said. I please encourage you to ask any questions. We have Joanne Hovis today from CTC, that's Columbia Telecommunications Corporation. They're out of Kensington, Maryland. I think you're going to find her that she's very informative and subject matter expert. And, you know, like I said, please ask questions. And again, thank you for coming here today. And with that, I'll ask Joanne to come on up.
Thanks, Alan. I am really short and the podium's not, so I'd like to stand here if that's okay with all of you.
Are you picking her up on the microphone?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me if it goes off and I'll move back there. But it's more challenging that way. Good morning. Pleasure to be here. And as I was telling everyone back there, it's always a pleasure to be in Florida. So thank you for your hospitality today. I'm going to go right into my presentation. I know my time is short and there is a lot of information to share. So I won't go into a lot of detail about my own background or my company's background, but please feel free to stop me if you have any questions or if there's anything you want to ask. We were commissioned by the city and OUS to take a look at your efforts to date and some strategic planning and future planning for how to best leverage and really maximize the value of the fiber that you have built and that you can build in the future. And that's the emphasis of the work we've done. This is a very quick summary of what we've done. We explored a wide range of both technology and business models for leveraging that fiber to best benefit the residents of the city and the small businesses of the city. And we did pretty extensive, statistically valid market research in both the residential and the small business communities to try to get a sense of what the communities are telling us about their needs and what they'd like to see and where the gaps are and what they might be willing to spend in order to have those gaps filled, both for business purposes and home-based business and other home-based applications, which are everything from the recreational use of the internet to education, healthcare, and so on. And I'll get into that in a minute. But that kind of gives you a broad sense of what we did. We looked at all these different models. We collected an enormous amount of data. We did some field work here in Ocala. And then we worked out some technology models and associated business models and crunched the numbers associated with them. I know that you've been provided with a copy of our report. I think there's close to 500 pages of analysis and data there. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but the backup in terms of the financial detail, the spreadsheets, and the data that came out of the market research and our analysis of it are all there in the report. And I'm going to summarize them from a very high level today. Let me start by taking a step backward and talking about what we're talking about from a technology and a practical standpoint. What is this technology and why does it matter? I believe you all have this graphic in front of you. I talk about this subject all over the country with many different kinds of audiences, and I always like to start by making sure that we have the same baseline in terms of understanding the technology. What OUS has been building over the past few years and what they are proposing to maximize even further is a very different technology than a lot of the technologies that we're accustomed to for the commercial internet, and this is an illustration of that. If you start up at the top, what you'll see is the oldest form of communications infrastructure technology that delivered internet that was dial-up over our old phone modems. And at the advent of the commercial internet in 1995 or so, this is how we all access the internet. And then technology has gradually changed over the years. And if you move downwards, this is not so much a timeline as a ranking of technologies and the speeds and capacity they can deliver. But there is a timeline associated with it. So the wireless technologies are actually very recent. But if you look at the graphic, which shows how much slower the wireless technologies would be for the application demonstrated there, which is to download and upload a 5 gigabyte network backup file. Okay. Let me take a step back. If the application I'm illustrating here is if I, out of my small business or my home-based business or at home because my children are creating a lot of education-related content, if I wanted to back up everything that was on my computer, my server in the office, or my computer at home, this is how long it would take me over these different technologies to upload it, send it up to the internet, or to download it, to bring it back down. And I would do this as a backup just in case something happened to my computer at home. I wouldn't want to lose all that data. Or even worse, if something happened to my server at the office, losing all of that data could be a very, very costly matter. So uploading and downloading for backup purposes is a key, essential task that we all do all the time as we use the internet in more sophisticated ways that small businesses do almost universally. And so I picked that as our illustration of a useful application. So if I were to do it using that old dial-up technology, you look at the top of the chart, the red bar shows how long it would take me to upload. The blue bar shows me how long it would take to download, to send up to the internet versus to pull down from the internet to my location. Using wireless technologies, what are referred to as 3G, which is available in many parts of Ocala, and most recent of wireless technologies just emerging in the commercial market, 4G, you can see what the time frame is. Now, these are very new technologies. These are high-end, sophisticated technologies. But the nature of wireless is such that we're still talking about relatively long periods of time because it is just intrinsic to wireless technology that it's not capable of the same speed or capacity as wireline technology. Then we move down. DSL is the technology offered by the phone companies around the world over their old copper plant, the networks that they deployed at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. This is a technology that most of us probably used in our small businesses for the past 7 or 8 years, and many still do. And you see again, we're talking about a pretty significant upload time, shorter download, but this is an asymmetrical product. You're not able to send things up to the internet as fast as you can pull them down. Cable modem technology, which is, this is the most recent form of cable modem, and this is what Cox is offering in many parts of this community where it provides service. And this is a far more capable product than DSL, but you see still that asymmetric upload versus download speed, and that we're still talking about some rather significant times. Then we get to fiber. And fiber is capable of a wide range of different options depending on how it's deployed. Once you build the fiber, which is what OUS is doing in Ocala, you put electronics on either side of that fiber, and as the electronics become more reasonable and increase in their own capabilities, they make your fiber more capable. You don't have to do anything to the fiber itself. The outside plant, the roads, as it were, the highways that you have built throughout your community remain the same. The only thing you're changing is, think of it as maybe the toll gates. Yeah. You're putting in toll gates that can process an enormous amount more. And this is the enormous promise of the technology you're deploying here and the investment you've made so far, which is that, as you can see, the technology is capable of a symmetrical 10 megabits per second. It's capable of a symmetrical 100 megabits per second, which is what schools probably need these days at a minimum, and will need quite a bit more quite soon.
Joan.
And it's capable of a gigabit. Sorry, please.
Yes, Mr. Priest.
Correlation there between the fiber that we do have going throughout the city. We discussed initially in that first outreach there for the study to be out there for the dark fiber service, which is one and the same, if I'm correct, but it's also for business. Is that the one that also would be under this fiber 10?
So with dark fiber is just the road itself. Think of it as the road, and it's called dark because in order to get fiber to transmit, you light it with lasers. So lit fiber is the stuff that's actually sending stuff across it. Dark fiber is the road without any cars on it. One of the things that you absolutely can do with your fiber and is done all the time in both the public and the private sectors is lease dark fiber. So essentially let somebody lease from you lanes on that road that they then light themselves. They put the equipment on it themselves and they determine what cars travel over it and how fast those cars travel. And you're not involved in that, you're just leasing them the road. Now you're keeping a lot of the road for yourself as well, but the genius of fiber is that it is so capable that you can lease an enormous amount and still have huge amounts of capacity. So you can be leasing it on a dark fiber basis, you can be leasing it on a lit services basis where you're providing the cars at certain speeds, not just the road, and you'll still have a lot for your own needs and for future economic growth. This is why, you know, my bias is probably apparent here, but I do this a lot. This is the one future-proof investment you can make in communications. Fiber is a technology that we will still be using 40 and 50 years from now. This is not a technology that will date. This is the only thing that will change are the electronics. As long as you maintain the fiber in your rights of way, this is going to be a very long-term investment, and that's one of the reasons why I'm a big fan. Now, this was all preliminary before I even get to what we concluded, but I wanted to start with it. Do you have any questions about this graphic before I move on? Okay, please stop me anytime. So why does this even matter? Why do these speeds matter? Why does the difference between dial-up and fiber, or between DSL, a 10-year-old technology, and emerging fiber technologies, why do they matter at all? And the answer is that these have real implications. The emerging standard for communications technology around the world is 1 gigabit per second. That's 1,000 megabits per second. That's 1 million kilobits per second, I think, if I've got the math right, 1,000. This is what the Federal Communications Commission has said is an essential speed for schools, libraries, healthcare, government buildings, public safety, all of the community anchors that serve our communities. Our use of the internet, our use of communications infrastructure is moving very, very fast toward far greater speeds, quite exponentially. If you think about where we started 15 years ago, when we all started using the internet at first for entertainment and other purposes, our needs have increased exponentially. And this is why speeds actually matter. I'm not going to read you this quote, but I suggest that it's worth taking a look at, and it's worth thinking about why these things are consequential. Unfortunately, we haven't seen the kind of investment in really big bandwidth networks in much of the country that we would optimally like to see, but there is a growing consensus, almost not a dispute whatsoever, among the people who look at these issues, that big bandwidth is incredibly important for economic and community development, that it's foundational to our future economy as a nation. And so you'll see a lot of the language in here reflects that. I'm not going to go into any detail about the international picture, by the way, other than to say that we are lagging as a nation the Pacific Rim in Europe. In 2000, we were number one in the world in this field. We invented the internet, literally. We created most of these technologies. Now most of them are being built overseas, and other countries are building at a much faster pace than we are nationally. And again, I'm not going to go into detail about that, but if you have any questions, please feel free. So let me talk about, with that as a backdrop, what we see in terms of what you've accomplished here with the fiber investment you've made as a community so far. Our analysis is that the investments made so far are paying very well for you and will continue to do so. You have, first and foremost, and this is actually my summary. Let me go into the more detailed. This is the summary of the next few slides. I'm going to look at how it's benefiting the city in terms of what you would be paying otherwise, how this fiber is of advantage from an economic development standpoint, the benefits that it brings, and then the point I made earlier about it being future-proof. So let's start with the benefits to the city and the savings. This is the difference between renting and owning. And not every community wants to own or has the operational capacity to own, but this is a community that actually does. And we think that because you have leveraged that operational capacity to build and operate your own fiber, which is what OUS is doing, you're achieving some really significant savings in terms of the services that OUS is delivering to city government itself and to itself. I just put it really simply, that if you had to go out on the market such as it is to buy the same services, you would not get anything comparable because the private sector doesn't have the same kind of infrastructure, and you'd be paying a lot more. You'd be paying more for less. So first and foremost, you're seeing benefits to the city's bottom line from what you've got. Second, you're keeping the city's payments for communication services here in town, and you're having all of the economic money multiplier benefits of that, rather than sending that money to New York or Philadelphia or Houston, which is where most of our payments go for communication services. And then the final thing is, and this goes to the point about how capable fiber is and how future-proof it is, your needs will without question escalate over time. Your needs for bandwidth and for sophisticated communication services as a city government and as a utility will increase, and you have an investment now that will grow with you at relatively modest incremental cost. So if you need to go from, here's an illustration, if you had 100 megabits, let's say 10 megabits to a particular city building, and because of new applications and very sophisticated applications, you need 10 times that or 100 times that, your costs are not going to be 10 times or 100 times your existing costs because you've got the infrastructure. You will scale up through use of new electronics as they become cost effective. In contrast, when you're leasing services, and I see this happen all the time, services tend not to get a lot cheaper when they're leased. If you needed to scale up by a factor of 10 when buying from a private sector provider who doesn't have technology quite this capable, you might see your pricing go up by a factor of 10. And the reality of that, and I see this happening in cities all over the country, the reality of that is the net result is that communities do not scale up because they can't afford to increase what they're paying by 10 or 100, and yet their needs are going up. So what they do instead is they reduce their use. They, instead of allowing the innovative new applications to come online, instead of innovating and letting the infrastructure support them, they have to stay to an affordable rate of services. You are not constrained in that way. You have the technology to enable you to innovate in terms of how technology supports internal government communications and services. Let me go on from there. Economic development in I'm going to say in my opinion, but I think this is a universally held belief among the people who look at communications infrastructure issues around the world. Communications infrastructure is foundational to economic development. There's just no way past it. It's as important as roads ever were in our economic development. And I mean, I think this is probably apparent if you just think about how much of our economy functions over the internet these days, and how much we need that infrastructure to support it, but how much of our economy has actually moved overseas because of enhanced internet capabilities in places like India and China. And a lot of rural broadband is actually focused on trying to bring some of those jobs back. That's a little bit of an aside, but I just want to make the point about why it's so important. Speaking more specifically, less as on a national basis, but more in terms of an Ocala context, how does this fit in with economic development? Well, it's been made really clear to me in terms of the strategic planning going on in this community that there is a strong interest in not only attracting businesses and jobs, but particularly attracting high-tech businesses and high-tech workers. And this it is the key differentiator of any community that has this kind of infrastructure in attracting new businesses, but in particular in attracting workers in that particular demographic. So I don't want to just read my slide, but let me suggest this. I own a small business. I have 35 employees, and I own my own small building. I can't get 1 mile outside Washington, D.C., 1 mile outside the Washington Beltway. I cannot get the kinds of services that you are providing here through OUS. And it is, for me as a small business owner, so critical and such a problem that I've considered moving because of it. I will never move my business again without going through consideration of, is there fiber there, and do I know that it will be supported and that the services will be affordable over that network? Let me say the same thing about where I live. It is inconceivable to me that I would ever live anywhere where I wouldn't get high capacity bandwidth. I can't go on vacation anywhere where I don't get high capacity bandwidth. It's just not an option for me. And in rural resort areas, I see this. I do a lot of work in those kinds of communities. This is a driver for many of those communities, because attracting people to vacation there, but certainly to live there, absolutely requires the infrastructure. I hope this is not a controversial or, that it doesn't come as any kind of surprise, but this is a technology that attracts people, and it's still a differentiator because most communities don't have the kind of capacity you offer here or the potential to scale it up. There will come a time in American history when it's no longer a differentiator, hopefully, where we will see fiber everywhere, and then what will differentiate communities is if they don't have it. But right now, it is still a massive step or a massive advantage for an individual community that can do this, or where the private sector has done it for them. But that's in very, very limited areas of Verizon's footprint. The home value impact, I won't go into a lot of detail about this. The Fiber to the Home Council is an industry group, so I always take everything they say with a grain of salt. That said, if I buy a home, this is a consideration for me. For all of my peers, it is as well. So it doesn't come as a huge surprise to me about this. There's a huge program in Amsterdam, which is where some of these numbers come from. The Fiber to the Home Council has put together to build fiber, and the largest investor is the housing co-ops that own a lot of the housing in Amsterdam, because they are betting on the future of their investment there. And they're building fiber to every one of those buildings because they think it will bring the kinds of workers and residents they want. Let me go on. One of the analysts on my staff, after I gave this presentation to Matt over the phone, one of the analysts put this slide together for me because he said, I really want you to be able to demonstrate why this bandwidth is really important. This is Patrick. He says he's 20-something. He's 26. I hired him about 8 months ago, maybe. He is. He just finished a master's in public policy. He has an undergraduate degree in linguistics, I think. And he's an extremely capable analyst and does quite a bit of work for me. Patrick is, I'm 43. I'm not a digital native. I grew up with computers, but I was already in law school when I first started using the internet. I use this technology extensively, but I don't use it like he uses it. He is totally typical of his generation, and certainly of the educated demographic in his generation. He does not watch cable television as we understand it, other than for sports, because he has to have sports. But he's really hoping that sports will move over to the internet. Most of his consumption of bandwidth is downloading from the internet. His experience of television is on the internet, and he does it through his Xbox, which allows him to get Netflix and other services, connects it to his television, yeah. And what would be an internet stream on a laptop or a desktop computer mm-hmm. is now actually on his television. He is not using cable television. He's using the internet for his experience of
right.
all of the content that's out there. He's extremely typical. He's never had a wireline phone. His parents had one when he was growing up, but he doesn't know what he would do with that. He's had a cell phone since he went to college, and he keeps that cell phone and that number, and he's moved multiple states since then. This is what the future looks like. Mm-hmm. This is what young people do with bandwidth. And they come off of campuses where they have massive amounts of bandwidth provided by universities who have been at the forefront of developing very high-end networks throughout the nation, including here in Florida. They come off these campuses and they are looking for something equivalent to that. I spoke with a young person recently who told me that he downloads 55 gigabytes of data a week for gaming purposes. He's an online gamer. I don't know how to put that in perspective other than to say that it's probably 1,000 times the amount of bandwidth I use, and I watch a lot of movies online. Now, he's getting all of that free from the university right now. When he comes off that campus and he goes to look, where am I going to live, where am I going to get a job, one of the things in his mind is going to be, am I going to have to go down to DSL speeds, which will give me 1/10,000th of the speed I've been using so far? You can't game. You can't do the kind of gaming he does over DSL. This is an illustration to give you a sense of why we believe that big bandwidth and fiber to development areas where you're trying to attract young people and businesses and so on is a differentiator, because they want to replace what they had on campus, and there's very few places where they can do that. Question.
My son lives down in Tampa. This is exactly what they do. He's 26 years old and works in the College of Engineering at University of South Florida. Except for the gaming, they don't do that. But the rest of it, the Xbox, the TV, it's exactly what they do. Never had a landline phone at their apartment. Always have a cell phone. I mean, you just describe them to a T.
It is a universal story, and it's almost amusing to watch, because I mean I don't think of myself as that old. I'm 43, but I am ancient. My young employees don't use email. They think of that as an ancient technology. They're not interested in music unless it's something that they can send to their friends online. They're sending video clips and music back and forth all the time. And they're doing 5 or 6 things at a time. They've got multiple screens open on their laptops. They got Netflix streaming down onto their television through an Xbox or a Wii. They are experiencing technology in ways that I don't, and frankly, don't really want to. It's okay. And they're experiencing technology in ways that my parents can't even conceive of.
Right.
I heard a presentation recently, just kind of close this out, by someone who said that anyone younger than 12 has probably experienced well over a dozen virtual worlds. I've never been to a virtual world, and I'm a big user of the internet. This is where technology is going. Video is coming over data pipes, over internet pipes, instead of over cable technology. And we're still going to see the old business models work for a long time for the private sector, and that's good, that's what they should do. But in terms of real growth and applications and development, it's all happening on the internet, the data pipe. And that's why big bandwidth is important on that pipe. And when I'm talking about pipes, if you think about, it all comes over the same big pipe, but there's phone service, there's cable television service, and then there's data service. Phone, going away. It's just dying. I mean, only people my age and older still have landline phone service. Now it's all cell and internet-based. It's happening over the data pipe. Cable television's still there and it's gonna be strong for a long time, but young people are not watching it on cable television, they're watching it over their data pipe. And the real economic development applications, the education applications, the healthcare applications, that's not coming to us through cable television. That's all over the data pipe. So where should the investment be? Where should the emphasis be? I would suggest to you, it's the data pipe that really matters, and that's what you've been building here, which is what's so interesting about what you're doing. Let me move on. These are numbers that Comcast released last week that I think illustrate a lot of what we're talking about. And Comcast is in this business, so they want to make this point also. But these are the numbers they're seeing just in the context of the higher-end business technologies that Comcast is selling and is trying to be engaged in. I would say that the potential impact is even greater for the kinds of technologies you have here, which are more capable, as I showed you in that initial graphic. But to hopefully sort of underscore the point. Okay, enough on economic development. The other benefits of big capacity broadband and why it matters, and there's, as with economic development, a lot of what we have in these areas is anecdotal. There's not an enormous amount of long-term research. We don't have longitudinal studies. It's just not something that we've had enough time for. It's also not something we funded really well, and I'm hoping that will change over time. There's more research coming from Europe and Asia than we're doing in the United States. But in terms of the anecdotes, there's very little disagreement about the value of what we're talking about and the benefits that big bandwidth deliver with regard to education, healthcare, and energy. The FCC has said that we are not very far from a time when all textbooks will be online. And think about the savings. Think about children not having to carry textbooks around, and think about how much more up to date those books will be, rather than 15 or 20 years old in communities that can't afford to buy new books that are so much more expensive than the online version would be because you don't have any of the production or shipping costs. The FCC has also said that they do not believe it is possible for children to adequately do homework without broadband access, that this has become now foundational to education, starting in the middle school years, which, based on my personal experience with my children, is absolutely accurate. Somebody else once said, for that person who does not think that broadband is essential to education, would they like that experiment to be tried on their children? And the answer, of course, is no. None of us would want that to happen to our children. We would want all children to have it. I won't go into a lot of detail about these others, other than to talk a little bit about aging in place, because I think this is a particularly interesting potential application that is being posited for communities with lots of retirees, and obviously that's a factor in Florida. But there's a very interesting pilot underway at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland to some of the middle and lower income communities around it, where they're making available high bandwidth connections into these homes, and then the Cleveland Clinic and the University Hospitals are piloting applications where they're doing 24-hour-a-day monitoring and constant interactions among healthcare professionals in the clinics and elderly or chronically ill people in their homes. It's early days, we don't have a lot of data yet, but anything that enables people to age in their homes rather than having to move to facilities where they can get care, if that care can be provided at least to some degree over broadband, that's a significant game changer in healthcare costs, but also quality of life. These are the kinds of things that are just starting to emerge, and we don't know what the future looks like, but I would say we'll posit something, some of them will work, some of them won't, but lots of things are going to work, because that's the story of the internet, that's the story of innovation, because once the infrastructure was there, the innovators came in behind and made it possible. So changing gears a little bit, we looked at what the benefits would be, we looked at what the benefits are under your existing structure, And then we did market research around a lot of these topics. And I won't go into a lot of detail about the market research, because I'll get to that in a little while when I talk about the business plan. But this, I think, is in some ways one of the most important questions we ever ask, which is to get a sense of how does the community feel about what the city is doing, and where the city fits into communications. And these numbers are, compared to lots of places where we do this kind of market research, actually very strong. If you look at that, they were asked on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being very strong support, 1 being strongly disagreeing with the city having any role in that context. These are pretty good numbers. You have a community, generally, that believes that there is an important role for the city to play here.
Mr. Quinn.
Where did you get this information? This is a survey that was done by our citizens?
Yes, we distributed written surveys to the small business community and the residential community. This question was asked of the business community.
Okay. How many did you put out?
2,500.
So, thank you.
They gave them these in March, and I just made a little note on them.
If we sent out 2,500, and I think the response rate was maybe 15% or something, which is very strong. Forgive me, I don't have all the numbers in my head. It's all in the report, but it's so many pages.
No, that's all right.
I'm big picture. And I have to be honest with you and say I didn't crunch any of these numbers. That's everybody back home. I'm really big picture only. And this is a strategy we use. We've done it in a whole bunch of different communities. And we did a comparable survey nationally for the U.S. Small Business Administration about a year ago. And I thought these numbers were very, very strong. And I never know what to anticipate because so much of it depends sometimes on political moves and so on. But I have actually found an enormous amount of the municipal and city involvement in communications has been in relatively modestly sized towns and cities in rural areas and sometimes in the most conservative parts of the United States. And some people find it counterintuitive, but it's true. The great majority of the municipal efforts, particularly through their municipal electrics, to try to increase competition and get this technology out there has been in very conservative areas. And you're not nearly as conservative as many of those places, but sometimes people expect that in more conservative communities, the community will be opposed to city involvement, and I've actually not found that to be the case. So I can go into more detail on any of these if you like, but there was pretty solid support for, well, let me put it this way. Your community is with you in what you've done so far and in taking some relatively modest steps going forward. Then, based on the market research and the data we collected from the market research, we devised a number of alternative business strategies, and we looked at what the economic feasibility of all of them was. And big picture summary is, first, we looked at very targeted economic development growth of the fiber to support economic development initiatives, and then secondly, we looked at what it would entail to build fiber to the premises, which would mean fiber to every home and business in Ocala. And we looked at a range of different business models under that latter one. This is the summary, let me get to the details. Get to the recommendation, I'll go back to that. With regard to economic development, we saw this as an incredibly promising option to pursue. You have the institutional knowledge already, you have the operational capacity, you have a basis, you're already providing these services, so scaling up is potentially, you don't have the incredible costs of getting started, of just beginning this as a product line, as it were, and the need is clearly there. You also have some very active economic development initiatives underway in this community, including for your downtown. And our recommendation is that OUS have the opportunity to, with every new economic development effort, so for example, targeted housing where you're trying to attract people to live there in the downtown area, that they have the opportunity to demonstrate that it'll pay to make this investment in that regard. And this goes back to everything I said 10 minutes ago, and I'm not going to repeat myself, but we think that it's incredibly promising, and if integrated into a broader economic development strategy, and so long as there is coordination among all of the different entities in city government and in the nonprofit and for-profit sectors that are working on these initiatives, that coordination is essential. They have to work together. OUS needs to be integrated into whatever processes they have, and vice versa. So long as there's coordination, we think the economic development promise is really pretty significant. There are two kinds of areas where there's economic development payoff, in our opinion. The first is to very concentrated areas like buildings where you're trying to attract multiple new residents, multi-dwelling units. Commercial areas where you're hoping that as the economy comes up, returns, that commercial enterprises will locate there. This could be a huge differentiator. The city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is a municipal electric utility and has built fiber throughout the community there. They built fiber to the home and business, but they also built to key economic development target areas. They reported about 3 weeks ago that 1/3 of the new jobs created in Tennessee in the past 2 years were in Chattanooga. Now, I'm sure there are other factors. They have an integrated economic development strategy, and it's a pleasant city and so on, but this was a key factor. Amazon.com has located two distribution centers there, and they have Japanese automakers who have committed to building plants there. And the fiber was an integral part of the package. Had they offered everything else but not the fiber, it wouldn't have been conceivable. That's an aside. But what we're suggesting is that an investment in making that fiber available to the areas where you'd like to recruit businesses as the economy hopefully returns over the next few years could be a very smart investment, and you can do it at relatively, because you're already operational in this way, the cost would not be as dramatic as it would be otherwise. All of that said, this does require an investment. Like anything in economic development, I can't say you're going to see that money returned in year one or year two or year three, and like anything in economic development, that money doesn't necessarily show up on the city's bottom line or OUS's bottom line because the benefits accrue to the entire community, not to the enterprise that is undertaking the effort. But as it's like any other economic development investment, as that goes, it's pretty strong. The second category is in the residential market, where OUS already has some very modest investments. They're serving 100, I think, residential customers, and they've been targeting people who live in areas where they're unserved by wireline infrastructure. So they're going to areas where there's nobody currently serving those individuals. And they're also targeting early adopters. And this is, I think, one of the interesting things that I learned about what they're doing here is the early adopter market. Patrick's an early adopter. People my age who use the internet the way Patrick does are early adopters. These are the people who drive where we're going in the future. And it's interesting that the people who have asked for OUS residential service are early adopters. They take care of their own lines. They're very low cost in terms of maintenance based on what OUS tells me. They really don't have a lot of operations and maintenance expenses, in part because these are sophisticated users who are using this technology in a way that does point toward the future and is really different to what they would be doing if they were getting DSL, for example, because you just can't do these things over DSL. So there's, whether deliberately or not, been a little bit of a sort of economic development and innovation element to the residential service they're offering so far. And it, you know, assuming that it pays for itself and that their costs are low, continuing that to the unserved or underserved and early adopters seems like a reasonable continued approach as they grow. The The last big point on here is just the point about integrating it with your economic development issues. Your economic development strategy about integrating it. And one of the tools we've seen used is sometimes where the economic development agency or authority or nonprofit in a community, or all of them if they're more than one, commits to buying a certain amount of the utility's bandwidth, and then they use it as part of their package to try to attract new residents and new businesses and so on. So it then becomes their tool rather than the utilities. But there are lots of different ways to work that, and that, you know, if you do go that route, council can also say whether there's a particular way to structure it from a legal standpoint. But it becomes, I think, assuming your economic development people are on board, a really important tool in their kit. So the second thing we looked at was fiber to the premises, to every home and business. And I will tell you, I am a huge proponent of fiber to the home. I am a strong advocate for fiber to the home. I really believe that the United States economy and our democracy would be well served if we built fiber to every home and business in America. That said, there's a reason we're not doing it. There's a reason the private sector is not doing it, and it's because it is just incredibly hard to make work financially. And that's the reality of what we found when we worked the numbers here. Even with a really solid interest from your residences and your businesses, because based on the market research, it was pretty clear that a lot of them would be interested in better alternatives along the lines of what you could be offering if you built this. Even so, it is just virtually impossible. Based on the numbers we saw, it's inconceivable that the network would pay for itself as measured by revenues coming in to offset costs, including financing costs. And that's not an unfamiliar story. This is what cities all across the country are facing, and it's what the private sector faces too. The big companies are not building fiber to the home for the most part. Verizon built in some very selected areas of its existing footprint, but has stopped essentially building. And all their investments are going on the wireless side, where their revenues relative to capital costs are much higher. This is just a very capital intensive investment, and we don't see, based on our current projections, and we're pretty conservative about these projections because it's a lot of money we're talking about, we don't see the network paying for itself. Now, if you count all those things that are not reflected on the financial statements, the educational benefit, the economic development benefit, the healthcare benefit, everything that's coming in the future, that's a whole different picture, but that's a much broader story. That, by the way, is how the countries in the Pacific Rim are thinking about this. So most of our competitor nations in the Pacific Rim are, their central governments are making the investments to build this infrastructure. They're paying for it centrally. We are not doing that as a nation.
I think that's interesting and would go back to the road analogy, whereas I don't think our paved streets are paying for themselves either, but there's a benefit to having them there.
That's exactly right.
Go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt.
The payoff here would be really dramatic, and that's very much the government of Japan has paid for fiber to the home to 90% of homes and businesses in Japan. The government of New Zealand is building it to 75%, or they're financing the private sector to do it. The government of Australia is building to 90%, and they're going to own and operate it themselves. They all have somewhat different business models, but this is what they're doing. We're not doing it as a nation. The federal government is not stepping in, and so the burden falls to you. But I have to say that as a relatively conservative consultant, as much as I believe this infrastructure would benefit you for the next 100 years, I also know you're looking, we looked at a variety of different business models, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but you're looking at cash shortfalls over 20 years, which would be the financing period, of anywhere from $80 to $100 million. It's an enormous amount of money. This is a very, very expensive infrastructure to build. And it's very hard to make pay. And we are particularly conservative about how we do this analysis. And there are other consultants who paint much rosier pictures, but philosophically, that's not where we are as a company. At the same time, as we really believe this is an investment that we wish everybody were making. We also want to be really realistic about what it entails, and the fact that it has been made your burden rather than the state or federal government's. And for a variety of different reasons, and we all wish there were an easy private sector solution here, but the private sector is not building fiber to the home in Ocala or the great majority of the United States. And so that's part of the reason why we have this conversation at all. I don't see a private sector solution emerging anytime soon. So we looked at a number of different business models, and let me summarize what those business models were. I don't seem to have more detail. We looked at the three different ways of doing this. The first was the open architecture model that Alan referred to, which frankly I think is a really phenomenal model, because it would involve Ocala building the network and then enabling the private sector to come in and not have that huge capital cost, but to come in and all compete. In a perfect, you know, ideal scenario, you would have multiple private sector providers competing over the same network. That's the perfect scenario. We don't know if that would actually emerge. We think there would be some of that. There are a couple of examples around the country where there has been some private sector competition. And one of those conservative areas I talked about, suburban and rural Utah, there's a consortium of 14 separate communities that have built fiber to the home, but they've had a very, very hard time financially with it. And what they do is they built and operate the network the same way they do the roads, but they don't provide services. The services are provided by the private sector. But it's not paying for itself. That said, it's a pretty great model for encouraging and incenting private sector competition, and hopefully for allowing innovation to emerge, but the financial problems are the same. And
is that the Utopia model?
That's Utopia.
Okay.
The other models we looked at were one where you have that open architecture, but you also provide services yourselves, so you're not dependent on somebody else to provide service, and you know you can meet the needs of the community. And the third one was a model in which you would be the sole service provider. So you'd not only build and operate the infrastructure, but you'd also be the service provider. You have all of those different roles. And that's really the dominant model in the United States. That's what our cable companies and our phone companies do. They own the network, they offer the services over it. It's also been the dominant municipal model in those places where municipalities have built. But under all three of them, and there's lots of detail in the reports, and all the assumptions are there, and the financial statements are all there in great detail if you're interested. But under all of them, it's a massive financial outlay and very challenging. So we put it out there for you, but you determine feasibility for yourselves from the standpoint of what is workable financially. But in this economic environment, we don't think it's feasible in very many places. The economic development model, though, which is much more incremental and much more modest in what it requires, which is also some level of public subsidy as in all economic development projects, that economic development model we think is incredibly viable, and we're well positioned for it. So finally, sort of sums this up, hopefully. We think this is a very solid start where you are so far, and even if you went no further, what you've got so far is quite outstanding and is really working for you. You're seeing a return on that investment. And you have the support of your community if you do decide to go further. I will stop there.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
You got to host them. I'm going to let you do it.
I'm writing like crazy. these are mostly just for us. Where primarily are the fiber lines existing now in the city? Are they just to... They're just servicing us as a government?
They're serving government locations, OUS locations, and mm-hmm. then they go further into the community because they're supporting OUS services in some cases.
The AMI program.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And that's actually been a really good investment because it's that sort of enabled OUS to deliver services in the commercial and residential market where there's a need.
Right.
Because they're sort of out there in the neighborhoods.
Okay. And this kind of goes back to the economic development model. You know, we're looking at Magna, the airport business park, you know, those might be some central areas. And then the other thing that I just have a note of is the 2035 plan that we're looking at, and we're looking at specific job centers and work centers, and that might be the place where we look to do the economic development.
Definitely, and have, you know, same thing with the enterprise zone, have this, because we're going to apply for another enterprise zone in 2013. Yeah, that'd be a real plus.
Right.
To have that.
To have that in those areas that we've already designated and already are kind of finding where those are, where those are going to be, and that would be the places to plan for growth.
And the downtown, too. I mean, the demographics that you talked about with,
right,
you know, youth and, you know, empty nesters and, you know, this
right
would be great.
And, yeah, I was thinking of those, you know, the developments that are coming, the projects that we're building right there.
Right.
And if we're using, if we've got the line here, it could just go across the street. That wouldn't be too expensive, would it?
You're absolutely right. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, we already have fiber at the airport and available to would-be companies.
Would be able to.
And as, of course, we build the water lines, the sewer lines, and power line in the MAGA project, we'll also extend the fiber line as well. And so all those businesses that will locate there, and notice the word will locate there, will have that right access to that fiber.
And the other question is downtown. They have those, we have the special taxing districts down there. I don't know if that's even possible to use those funds to extend fiber. Do they have to vote on how those are spent? Y'all will have to help me with my ignorance about how
that works. Do they have to vote on how they're going to spend the money?
We vote on how that money is spent, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if some of those could be used for that. I don't know. Those just questions.
Great questions. It's my understanding that when we target end users and try to provide them the fiber, we do it on a return on investment type of analysis. We look at what the cost for extending the fiber is and what we look to be the return on the benefit or return on investment, and look at making, of course, the targeted hits, or they call it cherry picking, to the locations that will best be served by our utility infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the way we kind of make those investments and move that fiber further out to the community.
So it, we've got fiber lines going to all the different, like, city, where there are city properties.
Yes.
Does that include, like, for example, we've obviously got it up here at the WRF number one. So then extending would be, we could theoretically extend where we already have properties and where we have it going. That makes the most sense to extend from there. Is that correct?
That is correct, and others might be able to speak to it a little bit more thoroughly than I can. The city has about 300 miles of fiber now in place and being utilized.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the initial investment was brought about because of the city's need for the fiber,
right,
running substations and running other critical infrastructure.
Right.
And then, of course, we made the key investment in the AMI program, which is to provide automatic meters to all of our homes to allow for the pay-as-you-go program and other types of technological investment. But maybe, Alan, you can further that description.
Let me try to clear up something. I'm sure that every one of you have on your mind, the city already has a bunch of fiber out there. Why are we talking about so much more money to invest to get a system of what we're talking about versus what we have now? So to go with what Matt's talking about and what you were talking about, there's a difference between just having a bunch of fiber running everywhere and having a system to run that fiber on. If you remember when Joanne was talking about the electronics to run something, there has to be a designed, engineered system to do that properly if you're going to go wide scale with it.
Okay.
So the difference of what we have now, we put in a system to serve ourselves basically at the beginning, back in 1995 when we had that workshop. And then on top of that, we decided to start serving the businesses and the community to help offset the cost of what we needed for ourselves for communications. Well, now we're at a spot where we're saying, we have fiber out there to do that, that's great, but we see what's coming in the future, what's getting ready to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to prepare ourselves for that, not only do we have to have fiber running in a bunch of different places, more than what we have now,
we have to have the system, the electronics sitting there that can actually feed all that properly. And so if
that's
you look
where
at
the
where,
money is in that system, that's where the expense is.
That's where the expense is, yes.
Okay.
It's not only running a lot more fiber, but it's putting in the electronics to run all of that.
Okay.
And to support it in a reliable way and to make
right.
sure that it can deliver 24/7 services and so on. So there is an investment involved. It's not just the incremental charge of
right.
the fiber one more block.
Right.
And that's why I always offer that caveat of, even for economic development, even where it's so clear what the value is, you may not see this investment return on your bottom line.
Right.
You'll see it in these other off-the-balance sheet benefits, including economic development.
Okay.
Then let me, for example, put more context to this. In our AMI system, we're not actually running fiber to every home. We're actually using radio signals that go to modes or hubs.
Right.
And then, of course, that connects to the fiber system, which allows us to operate that system. And
right.
so
right.
we're close, but we don't have that end mile yet.
Right. Is there any other questions?
Yeah, kind of just more and more. How do we kind of compete against, like, university towns? The universities had this huge bandwidth, and it's only going to be a matter of time before they start to expand it outside of the universities.
You're only competing in the majority of municipalities that are active in this area have municipal electric utilities, because it is so much more costly to even do this if you don't have the benefits already of having the engineers on staff and the bucket trucks, and you own the poles, and you already have billing software and so on. So there's much more limited involvement in the communications space among municipalities and counties who don't have the utility. So chances are you're not competing against other communities that don't have an electric utility in terms of your own investment. Where the competition is, I think, is that the private sector makes more investments sometimes in university communities, depending on where that community is. They're not doing it in Cleveland, despite the fact that they've got premier research institutions, right? That's it's not happening there, but it's happening in Pittsburgh. It's happening in Philadelphia. And the reason for that is because the kinds of customers that the private sector is interested in are in those communities. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question adequately.
We're talking about expense here, and it's like, okay, well, we've got a lot under the ground, or we've got a lot of network out there, and to go and start paying, putting this money towards this cost, that's probably not going to return to the balance line, the bottom line. How do you kind of sell that to the community? Hey, we're going to spend this money, and we'll build it, and it'll come. Which, I'm pretty confident it will. But how do we go sell that to a lot of people that we're going to put this out there, we're going to build these roads, and businesses are going to flock here, but all of a sudden they don't because, well, where did we miss in our market analysis? And, where are we missing competing against University of Florida or UCF or Cleveland or Pittsburgh or some of these other, how do we grab your business and have it relocate here, and you're able to relocate? You're able to recruit and attract the people that you want here. That's what I guess what I'm looking for is, how do I feel good about going forward and being able to compete?
There is a huge leap of faith here because we don't have the data. We don't have 20 years of studies that show what all of this involves. We have studies from the early broadband deployments as we went from dial-up to really low speeds that showed increases in education and increases in wages. In areas, particularly rural areas, that had broadband, but that was early generation broadband. What we're talking about here is multiple orders of magnitude beyond that. But there's a leap of faith involved. There's just no guarantee, and this is my conservatism as a consultant. You may see the payoff in 15 years. I don't know.
Okay.
I wish I could give you a really easy answer. And part of the reason the private sector is not building the infrastructure to the home, which is what we need so badly for education and the home-based businesses and so on. Part of the reason is because the public doesn't understand all of this yet. You know, we find that all the time. In the same way as, you know, in 1999 or 1998, if you had said to people in Ocala or most communities throughout the United States, hey, there's this new thing coming, it's called cable modem, and it's going to give you, you know, 100 times the bandwidth you've got over your dial-up modem, even for big users of the internet as it was in those days, probably wouldn't have meant a whole lot to them, right? And these days, that's kind of a basic thought for them, is that they need that kind of capacity. But with the exception of those young people and the early adopters and people who are really engaged in this stuff, and then the hyper-educated, that's another category, that a lot of the community doesn't yet understand what this bandwidth is going to do for them. And I wish, and this is a huge problem, nationally, there are a couple of efforts underway to try to create test beds for really high bandwidth networks, just so that we have demonstrations. There's one coming out of the White House and there's one coming out of the Aspen Institute. And the idea is, if we can just get enough of a kind of core area where there's really big bandwidth, then the application developers will come and we'll be able to demonstrate why this matters and why the private sector should invest. But there's a certain amount of desperation because it's very hard to demonstrate something that's not yet apparent. Now, it's easier, I think, on the economic development side that businesses require this. But let me suggest this. Consider, if you're considering this kind of investment, consider a series of phone calls or a trip to Chattanooga. Because they have really demonstrated something pretty profound there. Lafayette, Louisiana is another place. They've both built to the home, which is not what I'm recommending for you, but even your sort of institutional economic development strategy, which is much more modest. In both those places, they have attracted employers they wouldn't have otherwise. Lafayette has a nonprofit that started up that built a big digital media studio, and they have significant contracts from Hollywood where they're doing the digital media in what's really rural Louisiana because of the bandwidth that they have. So there are success stories about bandwidth, but it's all still anecdotal. Does that help in terms of selling the idea?
Yeah, I'm kind of like, do we, I'm thinking about next steps and what you're really, I mean, to the homes would be great for the educational perspective, but we really want to get to these economic development centers, areas.
Right.
And I wouldn't even include the schools.
I agree.
Lake County, do they run fiber to their schools? Are y'all familiar with that? We went and spoke to them a while back, and I think...
The village has taken over their network.
Did they take over the network?
And they're slowly installing fiber to it.
But I thought they took the opportunity just to run fiber and get a hold of that and saying we're going to run it to the schools and got even the county out of the way. This, I think it might have been the villages. But the educational aspect, I know the banking industry, the uploads and downloads, you know, former Councilman Kenny talked about the advantages his business saw to that, the ability to upload and download. And I know the medical industry with x-rays and other type of data that they're sharing is a tremendous opportunity there, engineering-wise. And IHMC here, they've talked about the Lambda Rail. I don't know where that lies in comparison to where we are right now, but their ability to, for their engineers or their scientists to do things from remote locations and share data and information and files is paramount for them to be able to succeed. So
right.
Is it more of a strategy to be able to help run the fiber, so to say, but run it to our economic centers rather than, and then if somebody's got the highway so we run in their front yard, can a private provider or somebody then, you know, take it to the home if they want to pay the additional expense to do that?
If you're willing to set it up that way, absolutely.
It sounds like we can do whatever we want to do.
It's entirely, you own the infrastructure. You can. It's entirely feasible to set it up that way where the private sector is serving the homes. Assuming that they're willing and that you have a willing private sector provider, and I believe you already have a local entrepreneur who's working in that area.
You're referring still to the open architecture environment, which is something we would very much want to engage in. The problem is that to build it full scale for the entire community is expensive to do that. It just doesn't pay for itself back. But like she was saying, we do have a provider right now that's doing that. They're in the business to sell internet service and they're buying it from us and they're selling it. So as time goes on, we see that type of interest growing more and more and more. And the more fiber that we have out there, the easier it is for us to almost get them on immediately rather than for them to have to wait for us to do the construction to do that. Does that kind of make sense? But
well, yeah. I guess I don't know if I'm asking the questions right or what. One of the things we're talking about is, should we just build this big network and put it all out? We have a big network out there, but do we expand that network, or do we let market kind of demand to pull that? As you know, if at my home, if I want fiber, you know, do I sit and wait for the city to build it out, say, hey, I'd like fiber, and have the city go build it out to me, or do I say, okay, I want fiber, and I'm going to pay for it to bring it to me, type of thing? Am I relating that the right way?
You can do the latter. That, by the way, is a lot of what the private sector does. It's not in the residential market because to build that fiber a block, a private sector provider might charge you $10,000. They might charge you $100,000. And so they're not going to do it for a $40 or $80 per month account. Where we see those custom builds are for large businesses. Very big, very rich businesses tend to be able to solve this problem for themselves because they can spend the money. That said, if they don't have to spend the money and it's already there in town, that's an attraction. But in the residential market, what OUS has been doing is where the opportunity arises, if they happen to have fiber and it's relatively cost-effective to extend it to the homes, and the payback period is relatively modest, measured in a number of years, they do it. It's not something that you can do citywide. It would be very hard to scale to citywide in that way. Because of the point Alan made earlier, that this is really sort of a custom ad hoc approach. If you were building citywide, you want to design and engineer it so you can manage it cost effectively so that you have all the right electronics, as opposed to adding on. I don't know how to illustrate why this is a concern, but it's sort of like you're adding additional blocks onto the tower without. Because you started here, mm-hmm. you don't have the structural underpinnings for getting up to here, but you're still adding the blocks. If you were going citywide, I would want you to take a step back and have these guys really engineer it, and it would be expensive. So there's going to be a sort of natural limit to what they can do in the residential market based on where they are now without having some real costs down the road. That said, they probably haven't reached that limit yet. And in terms of doing some serious planning on a case-by-case basis for economic development purposes, they can absolutely do that. They're not going to have to re-engineer the entire network in order to extend fiber to key development areas. They'll just have to do some planning around that. And the cost will be more than just the extension of the fiber, but they'll still be within the realm of what's feasible. They'll be subsidized.
And I think that's really the major takeaway from the study, is that due to the capital intensity providing fiber to the home, we go after the high-value endpoints where it makes sense and we can afford it economically, with maybe an emphasis on the economic development areas such as Magna and the Ocala Airport Commerce Park. And for me, I think that's the real takeaway from this study.
And just one other thing, too, is if we provide those areas and then people come to realize in the community the value of having the fiber network, then you get more of an understanding. If we were to start branching to the home or to schools, people understand why and what the value of it is. Once you do a couple of key places, then that knowledge grows about why that's important.
I think that's brilliant from the sense, you know, we used the analogy of roads earlier. Let me use a different analogy, power system back in the 1930s. It wasn't until the late 1920s, 1930s, then all of a sudden we said, wow, there's real value with this system and get it, you know, strung out to the rural areas and making that investment worthwhile. I think until we realize the value of this fiber, this value of this cable is really known and transparent, that people are going to start making that investment in it. But until then, it will be a local investment.
You know, that's a really wonderful analogy. And to sort of play it through even further, when we electrified the country, particularly rural areas, which took municipal electric utilities because there was no business case for the private sector to build. But when we did that, I mean, certainly the earliest cases was because we were bringing electric light to buildings. Nobody ever anticipated the billion other uses of that electricity. We didn't know about the fax machine. We didn't know about the copy machine. We didn't know about the internet. We didn't know about all microwave ovens, all the other things that we were going to use that electricity for down the road. So the business case had to be built based on just bringing electric light into our homes and businesses. But in the end, that was the economic foundation for an enormous amount of our prosperity in the last 100 years. And I think it's a really good analogy for that reason. People sometimes talk about the interstate highway system that way, is that it was built for defense purposes. And can we even imagine what our economy would have looked like in the second half of the 20th century without it? It was used for a million other things. That said, pretty pricey up front.
Yes, Mr. Priester.
We're looking at this concept that if you build it, it will come. And we can't imagine what's going to happen when the bandwidth is there ready to be used. And an example that I talked to Matt about and some others not too long ago, there's a device out there called a Slingbox. It's very simple device, not a whole lot to it. And what it's for, and when I tell you what it's for, you're going to even wonder, why would you want to do that? Granted, but hear me out. What this device does is it allows you to, at your home, you hook up this to your network, and you can go anywhere in the world and watch your television, your cable box sitting in your home. Now, you're wondering, okay, big deal, why do I care about that? Well, a lot of servicemen are using that, to be honest with you. There's a lot of uses for that. My wife wanted to get one because when we go out of town, she wants to still see shows that she's recorded on the DVR. And it makes it possible to do that. Was I able to do that a few years ago with some slower services that I had? No, I can do it now because I barely have enough bandwidth with the service that I have today that allows me to be able to see a fairly good picture. But as time goes on, that device is going to become a lot more widespread. It's going to have a high definition picture on it because the bandwidth will be there to support that. Now that's just, and I just use that as an example to show you what innovations will start coming out of this when that bandwidth is available. A lot of people don't want to buy it yet because the picture of that right now is not the best in the world. But fortunately, what I have, I'm actually able to get a fairly good picture out of that. So. That's what she's talking about when she says as innovations start coming out, as the bandwidth's available, you're going to see people just...
All kinds of things. Councilman Priester.
Boy, Alan, you really went out there on that one.
I did.
Jeez.
I wouldn't give you my...
You're like... that's almost like the Jetsons. Regardless, I had a question for you, Alan, on wireless web. We have it throughout some parts of the city, downtown areas and stuff. Our server, our system that we have on a scale of 1 to 10, how is our wireless server system? There's good ones and there's bad ones.
Are you talking about how much of an area we're covering or how good it is?
No, the system itself, the system that we have purchased ourselves, yeah.
Well, the wireless
for the Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fi that we have, as you know, we have it in different areas. We have it in the downtown square.
Right.
We have it in various... substation so that our electric personnel can go up and go to a substation and download information onto the laptops, that type of thing. And what we have is very adequate. It's in the neighborhood of a 30-day service.
He's looking for a scale 1 to 10, it's about a 9.5. He's one of the best manufacturers out there.
It's still there and reliable enough for that in the future growth? You're absolutely right, Ernie. That's exactly what I was looking for. You simplified it again instead of George Jetson over here. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions? Are there any comments from the audience? Anything else?
I just kind of went over our next steps. Where are we going? Where are we going from here?
Budget approval.
Oh. Did you want to?
Mr. Georgiades.
Come on up. Do I need his name and address?
Jay, don't leave.
Would you please state your name and address for the record?
Georgiades, 39641 Harbor Hills Boulevard, Lady Lake, Florida. I'm addressing Randy, excuse me, Mayor, your question about how do we compete. I was in Gainesville as long ago as yesterday. I was in the hub.
Yep.
Very simply put, what we need to do to bring high-tech companies here is invest money. In other words, when you talk about we're certainly there with the incubator. The next thing is, what funds do you have that you can attract these types of businesses? Not to take away from the agenda and the importance of what you were discussing. Very simply put, what you're addressing is, how do I eat the elephant? You know, what's my strategy? You know, where should it go? And I think we all get that. You know, you're going to go to business first. Homes are going to be down the road for whomever. But coming back to the central point, I'm 100% confident, not 99.5, 100% confident. If we have the financial wherewithal from the community to invest in these businesses, they will come. It's that simple. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, what are our next steps?
The next step is, we've got the study's results, and the main takeaway is that if the council wants to continue down the same path that we've done for the last 10 years or so, we continue making strategic investments in value-added endpoints. If the council really believes in the case of the pipe, of the fiber, and is willing to maybe make more strategic investments, we can look at doing that. But it's really up to the city council, because that is a policy decision, and of course, this is where those policy decisions are made.
What are our wishes?
Pardon?
What are our wishes?
Where we want to go with this right now is, you know, based on what the recommendations were, is we want to work closely with Mark Martell's group and really look at the businesses that we want to attract and where those areas are, mm-hmm. and really start to invest in those types of things. I can envision it as being something where we bring it to council as far as a new investment we want to make in a certain area. And get your blessing on doing that. I think it's a very conservative approach to being able to get fiber out into the community, being able to get some electronics out there, and just do it on a smaller scale. And like she was saying, the economy right now doesn't really make it easy for us to go out there and just build a whole entire system. They're doing it in short situations. I think it's a lot of sense. So.
I think that's a really smart strategy. If the economic development folks in OUS are working together and they come to you with a recommendation, and essentially two metrics. One is, what's this going to look like on the financial statements? It may not pay for itself, but what is our area of risk, and what's the economic development business case for it, and does it justify the risk with regard to the cash flow? And those things really should go together. They're not separate matters. And if they work together, then they'll have all the data they need, hopefully.
Mark Mundell. Let me give you an example. Right now, when we're working with companies, we, as you know, try to assess their needs, because in comparison to many other communities, we can't deliver a large check. And so we try to offer them speed, good customer service, and figure out what are their primary needs and try to see if we can attack those needs. We don't, for example, currently, because we've been reluctant to come forth with suggesting or requiring or encouraging them to use our fiber network. We don't really even talk about it very much early on with companies. If they came forward to us and said, this is our prime bandwidth, one of our major concerns, we would say, well, we wanted you to talk to our team. But unless they say that, we don't really bring it up to them, except for in our agreements, as you know. We have a clause in our agreements currently that says you'll provide the city the opportunity to, you know, provide this service, but it doesn't take it anywhere beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't market it. We don't say to them, do you realize how important bandwidth is to you? We don't show them the slide, and we don't sit down with these guys and try to try to leverage that. If council felt like this was something that you really wanted to promote, the economic development relationship, we would start doing those types of things.
We're very comfortable, staff, moving down the road that we have. Again, mm-hmm. identifying the value-added targets, going after them. In my personal opinion, I think the private sector at some point is going to be required to step up and make some investments. At some point, their infrastructure is going to be inadequate as their customers see and know about other ways of getting the information they want. And I think at that time, the open architecture that we'll provide will become very valuable because it'll be much, in my opinion, less expensive for them to rent that than to go out and build the brand new system for themselves.
Right.
And so I think there are some moving parts out there that are still going to yield some interesting results in the future. What they are in the short run, I'm not sure, but there are some interesting pressures building.
Okay, so we're looking at the economic development team getting with OUS.
Well, that's already happening. What okay. Mark is saying is if you would like to elevate the utilization of fiber in our discussions with businesses, mm-hmm. we can certainly do that. If you're interested in us continuing going after value-added targets, we'll continue that. But if council is interested in having us look deeper at trying to build fiber to the home, utilizing some of the business model and discussion taken today, we can do that as well. And that's really what's on the table right now.
What do you think?
Definitely. Yeah, I just I definitely want to look at it, you know, as far as an economic development tool, but I want to look at, you know, cost versus, you know, benefits and look at the areas that we can provide it in. I think it's important to provide it in the residential area, especially in the downtown. I think we're moving in the right direction. One of the things someone said, I can't remember who it was, private entities are buying this from us and building the infrastructure currently. Is that correct, Arnie?
We have a provider out there. You can call him a very small cable provider at the moment, and he's really just doing data services.
And who is that?
Gentleman's name is Bones. He's with Kent's Computers, and
he's been doing that for a number of years.
Yes,
correct.
He has.
Same person.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's basically what he does. He buys bandwidth from us and resells it to some of the businesses in town. So.
Okay.
And like I said, we see that there's going to be more and more of a need for that. There's going to be a lot of businesses that want to do things like that. And this fiber system gives them the opportunity to do that kind of stuff. And that is the open architecture system.
Okay.
It's just a matter of getting it there. So.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would like to move forward with this and keep looking.
Keep moving.
See what the benefits are.
Mrs. Rich, did you want to add anything?
No.
Okay. Anyone else?
I agree. I mean, we need to continue to go forward, especially from an economic incentive.
Absolutely.
And
I agree.
We've got a lot of work already done, so we've got a head start on a lot of communities that we need to take advantage and leverage what we've done to help attract some businesses here and grabbing hold of some of those ones we want. As far as getting to the homes, I see the advantage too. My kids, you know, they're doing homework, and I got a sixth and eighth grader now, and so they're on the internet. But doesn't sound like it's cost feasible at this point to take it there. That, you know, the speeds they have right now are acceptable for what they're trying to do. But the businesses, I mean, some of the industries that I've, you know, financial, medical, there's probably, you know, 100 others I don't know about just yet that can really take advantage of the game design is tremendous. Even our internet cafes, they may take advantage of that.
That's right.
That's
for all the wrong reasons. You got all the companies on the right side, then you got the companies on for all the wrong reasons are taking advantage of that speed as well. But let the market drive that. But,
yeah,
you know,
and I agree. I think with going down the economic development path, just keeping maybe in the back of our mind at one point, maybe looking at homes, but not pursuing that diligently at this point, but just focusing on the economic development.
Yeah, I wanted to focus on kind of the downtown areas.
Right,
this,
but that,
you know, development
right.
downtown.
Exactly.
But not so much residential as a whole.
Susie.
Yes.
We did discuss roughly, Alan, that we have 300, you said about 300 miles of service?
300 miles of fiber.
Yes.
Yes.
How many existing miles are there? How many do we need to fully connect?
Oh, gosh.
Every home?
Yeah.
The dollar figure's about $100.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not next year's budget.
Cash or check.
Where's John? He's sweating.
That's part of why.
It's not.
He left. Yeah. Oh, Cindy's back there though.
Yeah, and Joe was asked that one time, I think, by somebody about the fact how many poles we had out there or something.
Yeah, we go outside the service territory.
You're right. Right. Across the bridge out there at the river.
Well, we'd be happy to service. Fiber to the county.
Can you hear? Can you hear Arnie?
Oh, yeah.
I went there long enough. I think I'm sorry. Arnie Hirsch, 605 Southeast 51st Avenue. As far as residential, I just wanted to enhance your knowledge about, we have over 120 residents now. I speak loud enough. I'm sure it's picking me up. For a quick example, when Taylor Bean closed up, we know yeah. that, what that hurt, but in yes. telecom, we lost over $70,000 a year in income. We've picked that up in residential so far, all by word of mouth. We have zero marketing money from the small businesses that come to us because cops can't stay up all the time because they can't give them the bandwidth they need. We allow flexible bandwidth, so if you need it to download something real quick, it's there. They cap it. So there's a big difference in what we deliver versus what others do. CenturyLink, they do best effort. The newest technology, the Prism that they're doing, which is VDSL, has a limitation of 8,000 feet from a slick. It's about a mile and a half, and if you think about that, that's not very far. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there's a lot of residents who can't gain that. And they're targeting the same thing. They're trying to get $150 a month from each one of these residents. Same thing your cable company's doing. So the whole reason of everyone trying to start going to the internet to get voice IPTV is now you're not locked down to what the programmers are saying. And I'm sure right. you all do it if you do cable or satellite. You got to buy this package mm-hmm. or you got to buy this package. And because of the packages, that's where you're getting up to the $150, $170 a month. Well, when you start going to this IPTV, you can do a la carte. And there's actually three or four cable companies. We'll say internet cable providers because you can buy just what you need, just what you want. I was telling Gary back there, we just went camping through Alabama. Every state park in Alabama has wireless. We're talking Alabama.
Pretty neat.
Everywhere I went.
Careful those comments.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, and most of it was probably stimulus money, but my wife Very and I, possible. When we're sitting there with no TV, I can flip up the laptop with their wireless and we could watch day-old TV mm-hmm. of the sitcom shows that she liked to watch. So while we're in the camper, we watch TV. You just have to wait a day and you can watch anything that's on public TV. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the thing is that you asked a question and nobody really answered it. Where do we want to go? Well, we're already, by word of mouth, getting 8 to 12 requests a week for fiber connectivity, and each one of them we have to go look at to see if there's a return on investment, if we can do it within what we've been told to do within a 30-month payback period. So we do hit residential, and we're constantly doing residential. We're constantly doing small businesses, which we are slightly more than Cox. I mean, Cox is saying this $79 package with a couple phones. We're doing it for $99. We have one or two that have actually gotten to the point where they've paid off that return. I'm like, they say that they're dying because of the economy. Lower it to 79. We're still making money off of them, and yeah. they're not using it that yeah. much. I mean, you got CPAs. Their active time is over. Why do they need that much bandwidth now? So it's individual business case of how you set these rates and how you structure them. But where do we want to go? We'd like to actually target a residential area and build into it. Cherry pick, of course, go to somewhere that's maybe a little more prestigious, build it, and see if we get any opportunity there. And if so,
I think just by word of mouth, you're going to have more people start requesting it. And therefore, we're not investing money up front. We're just fulfilling requirements. Did that answer your question a little bit better?
I like the idea.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. I couldn't sit back there anymore.
Thank you.
All right.
Matt, do you feel like you have a clear direction?
We certainly do. Okay. We certainly do.
Anyone else have anything?
Thank you, Joanne,
we're adjourned.
For that review and that study.
Oh, adjourned. Thank you very much. Appreciate
very
it.
Nice. Yep.
Angel.
Don't worry, I don't think there's anything. Oh, let me stop this first.
So we're adjourned. Yay. Once again, thank you.